Tivrin was at the dig, he said. Now it was Mary who looked uncomprehending. When? The Sunday afternoon before the drop, the 19th. You certain? She told me before she left. She wanted our hands to look authentic. Oh, my God, she said. If she was exposed 4 days before the drop, she hadn't had her T-cell enhancement. The virus might have had a chance to replicate and invade her system. She might have come down with it. Dunworthy grabbed her arm. But that can't have happened. The net wouldn't have let her through if there was a chance she'd infect the contempts. There wouldn't have been anyone for her to infect, Mary said. Not if the virus came out of the knight's tomb. Not if he died of it in 1318. The contempts would already have had it. They'd be immune. She walked rapidly over to Montoya. When Kivrin was out at the dig, did she work on the tomb?
I don't know, Montoya said. I wasn't there. I had a meeting with Gilchrist.
Who would know? Who else was there that day?
No one.
Everyone had gone home for vac. How did she know what she was supposed to do?
The volunteers left notes to each other when they left.
Who was there that morning? Mary asked.
Badri, Dunworthy said, and took her off for isolation.
He walked straight into Badri's room. The nurse, caught off guard with her swollen feet up on the display, said, "You can't go in without SPGs," and started after him. But he was already inside. Badri was lying propped against a pillow. He looked very pale, as if his illness had bleached all the color from his skin, and weak. But he looked up when Dunworthy burst in and started to speak.
"Did Kivrin work on the knight's tomb?"
Dunworthy demanded.
"Kivrin?"
His voice was almost too weak to be heard. The nurse banged in the door.
"Mr. Dunworthy, you are not allowed in here on Sunday," Dunworthy said.
"You were to have left her a message telling her what to do. Did you tell her to work on the tomb?"
"Mr. Dunworthy, you're exposing yourself to the virus," the nurse said.
Mary came in, pulling on a pair of imperm gloves. "You're not supposed to be in here without SPGs, James," she said.
"I told him, Dr. Ahrens," the nurse said, "but he barged past me and..."
"Did you leave Kivrin a message at the dig that she was to work on the tomb?" Dunworthy insisted.
Badri nodded his head, weakly.
"She was exposed to the virus," Dunworthy said to Mary, "on Sunday. 4 days before she left."
"Oh, no,"
Mary breathed.
"What is it? What's happened?"
Badri said, trying to push himself up in the bed.
"Where's Kivrin?"
He looked from Dunworthy to Mary.
"You pulled her out, didn't you? As soon as you realized what had happened. Didn't you pull her out?"
"What had happened?" Mary echoed.
"What do you mean?" "You have to have pulled her out," Badri said. "She's not in 1320. She's in 1348.
Chapter 25.
"That's impossible," Dunworthy said.
1348,
Mary said bewilderedly.
"But that can't be. That's the year of the Black Death."
"She can't be in 1348, Dunworthy thought. "Andrews said the maximal slippage was only 5 years. Badri said Pahowski's coordinates were correct."
1348,
Mary said again. He saw her glance at the screens on the wall behind Badri, as if hoping he was still delirious.
"Are you certain?" Badri nodded.
I knew something was wrong as soon as I saw the slippage, he said,
and sounded as bewildered as Mary.
There couldn't have been enough slippage for her to be in 1348,
Dunworthy cut in.
I had Andrews run parameter checks. He said the maximal slippage was only 5 years.
Badri shook his head.
It wasn't the slippage. That was only 4 hours. It was too small. Minimal slippage on a drop that far in the past should have been at least 48 hours. The slippage had not been too great. It would have been too small. I didn't ask Andrews what the minimal slippage was, only the maximal. I don't know what happened, Badri said. I had such a headache. The whole time I was setting the net, I had a headache.
That was the virus, Mary said. She looked stunned. Headache and disorientation are the first symptoms. She sank down in the chair beside the bed. 1348.
1348.
He could not seem to take this in. He had been worried about Kivrin catching the virus. He had been worried about there being too much slippage, and all the time she was in 1348. The plague had hit Oxford in 1348, at Christmas time.
As soon as I saw how small the slippage was, I knew there was something wrong,
Badri said.
So I called up the coordinates.
You said you checked Bahalska's coordinates, Dunworthy said accusingly.
He was only a first-year apprentice. He'd never even done a remote. And Gilchrist didn't have the least idea what he was doing. I tried to tell you.
Wasn't she at the rendezvous?
He looked at Dunworthy. Why didn't you pull her out?
We didn't know, Mary said, still sitting there stunned.
You weren't able to tell us anything. You were delirious.
The plague killed 50 million people, Dunworthy said.
It killed half of Europe.
James, Mary said. I tried to tell you, Badri said. That's why I came to get you, so we could pull her out before she left the rendezvous.
He had tried to tell him. He had run all the way to the pub. He had run out in the pouring rain without his coat to tell him, pushing his way between the Christmas shoppers and their shopping bags and umbrellas as if they weren't there, and arrived wet and half-frozen, his teeth chattering with the fever. There's something wrong. I tried to tell you.
He had.
It killed half of Europe, he had said, and it was the rats, and what year is it? He had tried to tell him.
If it wasn't a slippage, it has to have been an error in the coordinates,
Dunworthy said, gripping the end of the bed. Badri shrank back against the prop pillows like a cornered animal.
You said Pahalski's coordinates were correct.
James, Mary said warningly.
The coordinates are the only other thing that could go wrong, he shouted. Anything else would have aborted the drop. You said you checked them twice. You said you couldn't find any mistakes.
I couldn't, Badri said, but I didn't trust them. I was afraid he'd made a mistake in the sidereal calculations that wouldn't show up.
His face went grey.
I refed them myself, the morning of the drop.
The morning of the drop? When he had had the terrific headache. When he was already feverish and disoriented. Dunworthy remembered him typing at the console, frowning at the display screens.
I watched him do it, he thought. I stood and watched him send Kivrin to the Black Death.
I don't know what happened, Badri said. I must have... The plague wiped out whole villages,
Dunworthy said.
So many people died, there was no one left to bury them.
Leave him alone, James, Mary said. It's not his fault. He was ill.
Ill?
He said.
Kivrin was exposed to your virus. She's in 1348.
James, Mary said. He didn't wait to hear it. He yanked the door open and plunged out. Colin was balancing on a chair in the corridor, tipping it back so the front two legs were off the ground.
There you are, he said.
Dunworthy walked rapidly past him.
Where are you going?
Colin said, tipping the chair forward with a crash.
Great Aunt Mary said not to let you leave till you'd had your enhancement.
He lurched sideways, caught himself on his hands, and scrambled up.
Why aren't you wearing your SPGs?
Dunworthy shoved through the ward doors. Colin came skidding through the doors.
Great Aunt Mary said I was absolutely not to let you leave.
I don't have time for enhancements, Dunworthy said. She's in 1348.
Great Aunt Mary?
He started down the corridor.
Kivrin?
Colin asked, running to catch up.
She can't be. That's when the Black Death was, isn't it?
Dunworthy shoved open the door to the stairs and started down them two at a time.
I don't understand, Colin said. How did she end up in 1348?
Dunworthy pushed open the door at the foot of the stairs and started down the corridor to the call box, fishing in his overcoat for the pocket calendar Colin had given him.
How are you going to pull her out?
Colin asked.
The laboratory's locked.
Dunworthy pulled out the pocket calendar and began turning pages. He'd written Andrew's number in the back.
Mr. Gilchrist won't let you in. How are you going to get into the laboratory? He said he wouldn't let you in.
Andrew's number was on the last page. He picked up the receiver.
If he does let you in, who's going to run the net? Mr. Chowdhury?
Andrews,
Dunworthy said shortly and began punching in the number.
I thought he wouldn't come, because of the virus.
Dunworthy put the receiver to his ear.
I'm not leaving her there.
A woman answered. 24837 here, she said. H.F. Shepherd's Limited. Dunworthy looked blankly at the pocket calendar in his hand.
I'm trying to reach Ronald Andrews, he said. What number is this?
24837, she said impatiently. There's no one here by that name. He slammed the phone down.
Idiot telephone service, he said.
He punched in the number again.
Even if he agrees to come, how are you going to find her?
Colin asked, looking over his shoulder at the receiver.
She won't be there, will she? The rendezvous isn't for 3 days.
Dunworthy listened to the telephones ringing, wondering what Kivrin had done when she realized where she was. Gone back to the rendezvous and waited there, no doubt. If she was able to. If she was not ill. If she had not been accused of bringing the plague to Skengate.
24837 here, the same woman's voice said. H.F. Shepherd's Limited.
What number is this?
Dunworthy shouted.
24837,
she said, exasperated.
24837,
Dunworthy repeated.
Well, that's the number I'm trying to reach.
No, it's not,
Colin said, reaching across him to point to Andrew's number on the page.
You've mixed the numbers.
He took the receiver away from Dunworthy. Here, let me try it for you. He punched in the number and handed the receiver back to Dunworthy. The ringing sounded different, farther away. Dunworthy thought about Kivrin. The plague had not hit everywhere at once. It had been in Oxford at Christmas, but there was no way of knowing when it had reached Skengate. There was no answer. He let the phone ring 10 times, 11. He could not remember which way the plague had come from.
It had come from France.
Surely that meant from the east, across the channel, and Skengate was west of Oxford. It might not have reached there until after Christmas.
Where's the book?
He asked Callan.
What book?
Your appointment calendar, you mean? It's right there. The book I gave you for Christmas. Why don't you have it?
here? Colin said, bewildered. It weighs at least 5 stone.
There was still no answer. Dunworthy hung up the receiver, snatched up the calendar, and started toward the door.
I expect you to keep it with you at all times. Don't you know there's an epidemic on?
Are you all right, Mr. Dunworthy?
Go and get it, Dunworthy said.
What? Right now?
Go back to Balliol and get it. I want to know when the plague reached Oxfordshire. Not the town, the villages, and which direction it came from.
Where are you going? Colin asked, running alongside him.
To make Gilchrist open the laboratory.
If he won't open it because of the flu, he'll never open it for the plague, Colin said.
Dunworthy opened the door and went out. It was raining hard. The EC protesters were huddled under infirmary's overhang. One of them started toward him, proffering a flyer. Colin was right. Telling Gilchrist the source would have no effect. He would remain convinced the virus had come through the net. He would be afraid to open it for fear the plague would come through.
Give me a sheet of paper, he said, fumbling for his pen.
A sheet of paper? Colin said. What for?
Dunworthy snatched the flyer from the EC protester and began scribbling on the back.
Mr. Basingham is authorizing the opening of the net, he said.
Colin peered at the writing.
You'll never believe that, Mr. Dunworthy. On the back of a flyer.
Then fetch me a sheet of paper, he shouted.
Colin's eyes widened.
I will. You wait here, all right? He said placatingly. Don't leave.
He dashed back inside and reappeared immediately with several sheets of hard copy paper. Dunworthy snatched it from him and scrawled the orders and Basingham's name.
Go and fetch your book. I'll meet you at Brazenose.
What about your coat?
There's no time, he said.
He folded the paper in fourth and jammed it inside his jacket.
It's raining. Shouldn't you take a taxi? Colin said.
There aren't any taxis.
He started off down the street.
Great Aunt Mary's going to kill me, you know, Colin called after him. She said it was my responsibility to see that you got your enhancement.
He should have taken a taxi. It was pouring by the time he reached Brazenose. A hard, slanting rain that would be sleet in another hour. Dunworthy felt chilled to the bone. The rain had at least driven the picketers away. There was nothing in front of Brazenose but a few wet flyers they had dropped. An expandable metal gate had been pulled across the front of the entrance to Brazenose. The porter had retreated inside his lodge and the shutter was down.
Open up!
Dunworthy shouted. He rattled the gate loudly.
Open up immediately!
The porter pulled the shutter up and looked out. When he saw it was Dunworthy, he looked alarmed and then belligerent.
Brazenose is under quarantine, he said. It's restricted. Open this gate immediately, Dunworthy said. I'm afraid I can't do that, sir, he said. Mr. Gilchrist has given orders that no one be admitted to Brazenose until the source of the virus is discovered. We know the source, Dunworthy said. Open the gate.
The porter let the shutter down, and in a minute he came out of the lodge and over to the gate.
Was it the Christmas decorations? He said.
They said the ornaments were infected with it.
Nope, Dunworthy said.
Open the gate and let me in.
I don't know whether I should do that, sir, he said, looking uncomfortable. Mr. Gilchrist.
Mr. Gilchrist isn't in charge anymore, he said.
He pulled the folded paper out of his jacket and poked it through the metal gate at the porter. He unfolded it and read it, standing there in the rain.
Mr. Gilchrist is no longer acting head, Dunworthy said. Mr. Basingham has authorized me to take charge of the drop. Open the gate.
Mr. Basingham, he said, peering at the already blotted signature.
I'll find the keys, he said. He went back in the lodge, taking the paper with him. Dunworthy huddled against the gate, trying to keep out of the freezing rain and shivering. He had been worried about Kivrin sleeping on the cold ground, and she was in the middle of a holocaust, where people froze to death because no one was left on their feet to chop wood, and the animals died in the fields because no one was left alive to bring them in. 80,000 dead in Siena, 300,000 in Rome, more than 100,000 in Florence, one half of Europe. The porter finally emerged with a large ring of keys and came over to the gate. I'll have it open in a moment, sir, he said, sorting through the keys. Kivrin would surely have gone back to the drop as soon as she realized it was 1348. She would have been there all this time, waiting for the net to open, frantic that they hadn't come to get her. If she had realized, she would have no way of knowing she was in 1348. Badri had told her the slippage would be several days. She would have checked the date against the Advent holy days and thought she was exactly where she was supposed to be. It would never have occurred to her to ask the year. She would think she was in 1320, and all the time the plague would be sweeping toward her. The gate's lock clicked free, and Unworthy pushed the gate open far enough to squeeze through. Bring your keys, he said. I need you to unlock the laboratory. That key's not on here, the porter said, and disappeared into the lodge again. It was icy in the passage, and the rain came slanting in, colder still. Dunworthy huddled next to the door of the lodge, trying to catch some of the heat from inside, and jammed his hands hard against the bottoms of his jacket pockets to stop the shivering. He had been worried about cutthroats and thieves, and all this time she had been in 1348, where they had piled the dead in the streets, where they had burned Jews and strangers at the stake in their panic. He had been worried about Gilchrist not doing parameter checks, so worried that he had infected Badri with his anxiety, and Badri, already feverish, had refed the coordinates. So worried. He realized suddenly that the porter had been gone too long, that he must be warning Gilchrist. He moved toward the door, and as he did, the porter emerged, carrying an umbrella and exclaiming over the cold. He offered half the umbrella to Dunworthy. I'm already wet through, Dunworthy said, and strode off ahead of him through the quad. The door of the laboratory had a yellow plastic banner stretched across it. Dunworthy tore it off while the porter searched through his pockets for the keys to the alarm, switching the umbrella from hand to hand. Dunworthy glanced up behind him at Gilchrist's rooms. They overlooked the laboratory, and there was a light on in the sitting room, but Dunworthy couldn't detect any movement. The porter found the flat card key that switched off the alarm. He switched it off and began looking for the key to the door. I'm still not certain I should unlock the laboratory without Mr. Gilchrist's authorization, he said. Mr. Dunworthy, Colin shouted from halfway across the quad. They both looked up. Colin came racing up, drenched to the skin with the book under his arm, wrapped in the muffler. It didn't hit parts of Oxfordshire till March, he said, stopping between words to catch his breath. Sorry, I ran all the way. What parts? Dunworthy asked. Colin handed the book to him and bent over, his hands on his knees, taking deep, noisy breaths. It doesn't say. Dunworthy unwound the muffler and opened the book to the page Colin had turned down. But his spectacles were too spattered with rain to read it, and the open pages were promptly soaked. It says it started in Melcombe and moved north to Bath and east, Colin said. It says that it was in Oxford at Christmas and London the next October, but that parts of Oxfordshire didn't get it till late spring
and that a few individual villages were missed until July. Dunworthy stared blindly at the unreadable pages.
That doesn't tell us anything, he said.
I know, Colin said. He straightened up, still breathing hard. But at least it doesn't say the plague was all through Oxfordshire by Christmas. Perhaps she's in one of those villages it didn't come to till July. Dunworthy wiped the wet pages with a dangling muffler and shut the book. It moved east from Bath, he said softly. Gengate's just south of the Oxford-Bath Road. The porter had finally decided on a key. He pushed it into the lock. I rang up Andrews again, but there was still no answer. The porter opened the door. How are you going to run the net without a tech? Colin said.
Run the net? The porter said, the key still in his hand. I understood that you wished to obtain data from the computer. Mr. Gilchrist won't allow you to run the net without authorization.
He took out Basingham's authorization and looked at it.
I'm authorizing it, Dunworthy said, and swept past him into the laboratory.
The porter started in, caught his open umbrella on the doorframe, and fumbled on the handle for the catch. Colin ducked under the umbrella and in after Dunworthy.
Gilchrist must have turned the heat off. The laboratory was scarcely warmer than the outside. But Dunworthy's spectacles, wet as they were, steamed up. He took them off and tried to wipe them dry on his wet suit jacket.
Here, Colin said, and handed him a wadded length of paper tissue. It's lavatory paper. I've been collecting it for Mr. Finch. The thing is, it's going to be difficult enough to find her if we land in the proper place, and you said yourself that getting the exact time and place are awfully complicated.
We already have the exact time and place, Dunworthy said,
wiping his spectacles on the lavatory paper. He put them on again. They were still blurred.
I'm afraid I shall have to ask you to leave, the porter said. I cannot allow you in here without Mr. Gilchrist.
He stopped. Oh, blood, Colin muttered. It's Mr. Gilchrist.
What's the meaning of this?
Gilchrist said.
What are you doing here?
I'm going to bring Kivrin through, Dunworthy said.
On whose authority?
Gilchrist said.
This is Brazenose's net, and you are guilty of unlawful entry.
He turned on the porter.
I gave you orders that Mr. Dunworthy was not to be allowed on the premises.
Mr. Basingham authorized it, the porter said.
He held the damp paper out. Gilchrist snatched it from him.
Basingham?
He stared down at it.
This isn't Basingham's signature, he said furiously. Unlawful entry, and now forgery. Mr. Dunworthy, I intend to file charges, and when Mr. Basingham returns, I intend to inform him of your...
Dunworthy took a step toward him.
And I intend to inform Mr. Basingham how his acting head of faculty refused to abort a drop, how he intentionally endangered an historian, how he refused to allow access to this laboratory, and how, as a result, the historian's temporal location could not be determined.
He waved his arm at the console.
Do you know what this fix says? This fix, that you wouldn't let my tech read for 10 days because of a lot of imbeciles who don't understand time travel, including you. Do you know what it says? Kivrin's not in 1320. She's in 1348 in the middle of the Black Death.
He turned and gestured toward the screens.
And she's been there 2 weeks because of your stupidity. Because of...
He stopped.
You have no right to speak to me that way,
Gilchrist said.
And no right to be in this laboratory. I demand that you leave immediately.
Dunworthy didn't answer. He took a step toward the console.
Call the proctor,
Gilchrist said to the porter.
I want them thrown out.
The screen was not only blank, but dark. And so were the function lights above it on the console. The power switch was turned to off.
You've switched off the power, Dunworthy said.
And his voice sounded as old as Badri's had.
You've shut down the net.
Yes,
Gilchrist said.
And a good thing, too, since you feel you have the right to barge in without authorization.
He put a hand out blindly toward the blank screen, staggering a little.
You've shut down the net, he repeated.
Are you all right, Mr. Dunworthy? Colin said, taking a step forward.
I thought you might attempt to break in and open the net, Gilchrist said. Since you seem to have no respect for Medieval's authority. I cut off the power to prevent that happening, and it appears I did the right thing.
Dunworthy had heard of people being struck down by bad news. When Badri had told him Kivrin was in 1348, he had not been able to absorb what it meant. But this news seemed to strike him with a physical force. He couldn't catch his breath.
You shut the net down, he said. You've lost the fix.
Lost the fix? Gilchrist said. Nonsense. There are backups and things, surely. When the power's switched on again.
Does that mean we don't know where Kivrin is? Colin asked.
Yes,
Dunworthy said, and thought as he fell.
I'm going to hit the console like Badri did. But he didn't.
He fell almost gently, like a man with the wind knocked out of him, and collapsed like a lover into Gilchrist's outstretched arms.
I knew it, he heard Colin say. This is because you didn't get your enhancement. Great Aunt Mary's going to kill me.
Chapter 26. That's impossible, Kivrin said. It can't be 1348.
But it all made sense. Hermione's chaplain dying, and they're not having any servants. Eloise not wanting to send Garwin to Oxford to find out who Kivrin was. There is much illness there, Lady Evoldi had said. And the Black Death had hit Oxford at Christmas in 1348.
What happened? She said, and her voice rose out of control. What happened?
I was supposed to go to 1320. Mr. Dunworthy told me I shouldn't come. He said Medieval didn't know what they were doing, but they couldn't have sent me to the wrong year. She stopped.
You must get out of here. It's the Black Death.
They all looked at her so uncomprehendingly that she thought the interpreter must have lapsed into English again.
It's the Black Death, she said again. The Blue Sickness.
Nay,
Eloise said softly, and Kivrin said, Lady Eloise, you must take Lady Hermione and Father Roche down to the hall.
It cannot be, she said.
But she took Lady Hermione's arm and led her out, Hermione clutching the poultice as if it were her reliquary. Maisie darted after them, her hands clutched to her ears.
You must go too, Kivrin said to Roche. I will stay with the clerk.
Throw,
the clerk murmured from the bed, and Roche turned to look at him. The clerk struggled to rise, and Roche started toward him.
No, Kivrin said and grabbed his sleeve. You mustn't go near him.
She interposed herself between him and the bed. The clerk's illness is contagious, she said, willing the interpreter to translate. Infectious. It is spread by fleas and by... She hesitated, trying to think how to describe droplet infection. By the humours and exhalations of the ill. It is a deadly disease, which kills nearly all who come near it.
She watched him anxiously, wondering if he had understood anything she'd said, if he could understand it. There had been no knowledge of germs in the 1300s, no knowledge of how diseases spread. The contemps had believed the Black Death was a judgment from God. They had thought it was spread by poisonous mist that floated across the countryside by a dead person's glance, by magic.
"Father,"
the clerk said, and Roche tried to step past Kivrin, but she barred his way.
"We cannot leave them to die," he said.
They did, though, she thought. They ran away and left them. People abandoned their own children, and doctors refused to come, and all the priests fled. She stooped and picked up one of the strips of cloth Lady Imani had torn for her poultice. "You must cover your mouth and nose with this," she said. She handed it to him, and he looked at it, frowning, and then folded it into a flat packet and held it to his face. "Tie it," Kivrin said, picking up another one. She folded it diagonally and put it over her nose and mouth like a bandit's mask and tied it in a knot in the back. "Like this." Roche obeyed, fumbling with the knot, and looked at Kivrin. She moved aside, and he bent over the clerk and put his hand on his chest. "Don't," she said, and he looked up at her. "Don't touch him any more than you have to." She held her breath as Roche examined him, afraid that he would start up suddenly again and grab at Roche, but he didn't move at all. The bubeau under his arm had begun to ooze blood with a slow greenish pus. Kivrin put a restraining hand on Roche's arm. "Don't touch it," she said. "He must have broken it when we were struggling with him." She wiped the blood and pus away with one of Hermione's cloth strips, and bound up the wound with another, tying it tightly at the shoulder. The clerk did not wince or cry out, and when she looked at him, she saw he was staring straight ahead, unmoving. "Is he dead?" she asked. "Nay," Roche said, his hand on his chest again, and she could see the faint rise and fall. "I must bring the sacraments," he said through the mask, and his words were almost as blurred as the clerk's. "No," Kivrin thought, the panic rising again. "Don't go. What if he dies? What if he rises up again?" Roche straightened. "Do not fear," he said. "I will come again." He went out rapidly without shutting the door, and Kivrin went over to close it. She could hear sounds from below, Eloise's and Roche's voices. She should have told him not to speak to anyone. Agnes said, "I wish to stay with Kivrin," and began to howl, and Rosamond answered her angrily, shouting over the crying. "I will tell Kivrin," Agnes said, outraged, and Kivrin shoved the door to and barred it. "Agnes must not come in here, nor Rosamond, nor anyone. They must not be exposed." There was no cure for the Black Death. The only way to protect them was to keep them from catching it. She tried frantically to remember what she knew about the plague. She had studied it in 14th century, and Dr. Ahrens had talked about it when she'd given Kivrin her inoculations. There were two distinct types. No, three. One went directly into the bloodstream and killed the victim within hours. Bubonic plague was spread by rat fleas, and that was the kind that produced the buboes. The other kind was pneumonic, and it didn't have buboes. The victim coughed and vomited up blood, and that was spread by droplet infection, and that was horribly contagious. But the clerk had the bubonic, and that wasn't as contagious. Simply being near the patient wouldn't do it. The flea had to jump from one person to another. She had a sudden vivid image of the clerk falling on Rosamond, bearing her down to the floor.
What if she gets it? She thought. She can't. She can't get it. There isn't any cure.
The clerk stirred in the bed, and Kivrin went over to him.
Thirsty,
he said, licking his lips with his swollen tongue. She brought him a cup of water, and he drank a few gulps greedily, and then choked and spewed it over her. She backed away, yanking off the drenched mask. It's the bubonic, she told herself, wiping frantically at her chest. This kind isn't spread by droplet, and you can't get the plague. You've had your inoculation. But she had had her antivirals, and her T-cell enhancement, too. She should not have been able to get the virus either. She should not have landed in 1348.
What happened?
She whispered. It couldn't be the slippage. Mr. Dunworthy had been upset that they hadn't run slippage checks. But even at its worst, the drop would only have been off by weeks, not years. Something must have gone wrong with the net.
This ends side 2 of cassette 13 of Doomsday Book. Please fast forward to the end before loading cassette 14.